Hey, look, there's nothing wrong with being wealthy. I like cars, I like watches, but I don't think I'm a real twat, and some people might. I flaunt it because I like it. What's the point in having a nice watch and then not wearing it?
Welcome to the podcast, Rob. Pleasure to have you.
Thank you very much. Great to have you.
So let's start off with a pretty hard one. Google says your net worth is $100 million. How accurate is that?
It also says, if you look somewhere else, that it's £75,000.
Wow.
And my watch is worth more than that. Google knows jack shit about my net worth.
That's the way you want it, I suppose.
Yeah, it is. Like, I remember asking Robin Sharma this, and he was like, that's a disgracefully rude question. And I actually don't think it's a rude question. I think it's a really good question. And I like talking about money. But I have been sworn to secrecy by my wife, my business partner, my accountant, to never reveal my net worth, which we can talk about as much as you like. But that seems like a shit answer. So I can tell you I'm worth a lot more than 10 million, but I do have 340 properties that I co-own with my business partner. I have 7 cars. We have a shared interest in watches, don't we?
100%.
And I have the UK's largest training business. So I'll let people do their own guess, but it was 10 a long time ago. I stopped counting at 10 many years ago.
What are the negative implications? Maybe taxes as part of it. Is there anything else, other reasons why you wouldn't want to say?
Let's say you're worth 100 million
yeah.
and you wanted to be smart and get your tax bill down. And let's say you'd got 30 million off your tax bill and then you went around blurting that you're worth 200 mil. Maybe HMRC would be like... you don't want that shit. And you know, when you're 21, you haven't made that money, you can say whatever you want. But my accountant's really smart and he saves us a lot of money in tax. And he even says to me, well, you know, it's all legitimate, of course, otherwise I wouldn't even talk about it. But he says, the story's got to look straight. I buy a lot of watches and art and things. I bought a Tom York piece. I don't know if you like Radiohead, but I bought a Tom York piece today. And I buy a lot of assets in my company. So I got all this stuff, but I haven't drawn any money out. I was talking to your dad about that and like the crazy taxes. So tax is one of them. I've been stalked. We had my cars tracked a few weeks ago. We just found randomly.
Did they put air tags in there?
This is random as hell, right? I was driving and I don't like killing anything on the road. So I was slowed down in for pigeons, which are annoying. And this pigeon, this pigeon is going down. It wasn't moving. It was looking at me and I hit it straight on, dead. And then I got back and I just thought I better check the car because it was that new one. I just got out there.
Yeah.
And there's a fucking black tracker hanging off the bottom of it. And it had R on it.
Right.
For Rob. And then I just got my wife an Aston Martin and I said, we better have a look under that. There's a black box and it has G on it for Gem. Well, it had J because they don't know how to spell Gemma in Peterborough. It's spelled my wife with a G. And my cars are being tracked.
So what do you make of that?
You can't wear that in London. No. It's like, bye.
I don't wear this in London.
I go to London with this on and I put it in my pocket when I go out and walk. And I put on one of those swatches that, you know, that I bought you guys. Mm,
yeah.
And I put that on out there.
Moon swatches.
Yeah. And this goes in my pocket. Yeah. So actually a moon swatch is better in London than a Richard Mille. It's just, look.
So for the viewers that don't know, how much is that watch that you're wearing right now?
This would be a scoop. I don't know. 255,000.
It's crazy. That's a lot of money on a watch.
What do you make of these stalkers though? Like, what do you think about that? That's just mental.
Yeah. Well, one of them I can't talk about. She was female and right. It didn't end well. Maybe in a few years' time. Most people are cool. Most people are fans and they come up.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is one, you know, I like coming on shows like this and talking about how, hey, look, there's nothing wrong with being wealthy. I like cars, I like watches, but I don't really think I'm a real twat. And some people might. I flaunt it because I like it. What's the point in having a nice watch and then not wearing it? What's the point in having a childhood dream Ferrari Testarossa and then when you've got money to buy it, not buying it and leaving it all in your company because you don't want to draw out the tax? But then, because when you do, you attract a load of attention, as you know, because you've got big channels and you know what it brings. And the way I see it is I'm not crying about it. I love my life. I like the fact that I can have these nice things. And it's the price of being wealthy.
But waking up and, you know, like talking about people stalking you is one thing, but waking up and having a tracker on your car, like that's another level.
Yeah, I mean, my wife didn't like that and we are in the process, we pretty much have really upgraded our security in our house. It was really good a few years ago, but these things develop. Yeah.
Do you have kids?
Yeah, I have two kids, 9 and 12.
So knowing that their safety or your family's safety in general is maybe impacted, when you find things like, oh, people have been stalking my calf however, you know, how long, is there any part of you that thinks, am I doing the right thing by being a public figure and almost letting people know we are wealthy, we have something that you might want?
Well, if people like you stop asking me my net worth, I won't have to worry about it. I'm worth 25 pence.
Yeah.
No regrets. You've got to be yourself, haven't you?
Yeah.
Hopefully it won't end badly. You know, I know James Caan, he mentored me from Dragon's Den and his family got kidnapped. You know, and I'm not a billionaire and they have it a lot worse.
Yeah, so this was actually going to be one of my questions. I'll bring it up now. Would you ever want to be a billionaire? Because we were with Iman Gaji and we asked this exact question. He said, well, he probably will inevitably become a billionaire because that's the way things are going. But, you know, once you get to that level of wealth, you get controlled by the puppet masters a bit more and they're more careful about what you say because what you say has a bigger impact.
Yeah. I don't know. I've not got there. I don't know Iman's net worth. I think it's maybe a bit cocky to say, yeah, I'll be a billionaire, you know, in the end, you know, because it's quite a rare thing. Mm. I don't have a goal to be a billionaire. Maybe in my 20s I did when I was a bit more cocky. I've got a good net worth. I've got a great life. But like, you could probably, you see, 10 million's enough. I know this because I've gone past it. And actually, the smart thing to do is to stop at about 10, 20.
Why is that the smart thing to do then?
Because you're big enough to have a great life and not too big to go on the radar. Mm. But how do you stop? Like, if you're at 20 mil and then there's 50 and 100, are you going to stop?
No, because the train's already going, isn't it? You'd have to stop that.
But you could slow it down.
But to be the type of person that can get to that stage, you're probably
more.
The type
you
of person
more.
That does always want more, or you wouldn't have got to 10.
Exactly. So, to be a billionaire, you have to help 100 million people. You know, you have to have something that a lot of people want and need, and you have to be useful and valuable. And I think there's probably some upsides and many downsides of being a billionaire. There's some upsides and many downsides of being broke. I've been broke and I've been wealthy. So I know both sides of it. Like, I don't think I can stop. I don't think you guys could stop.
What would happen in regards to your health, mental health, if you stopped everything tomorrow?
I'd go fucking mad. Nuts. Like, what would I do with my life?
Yeah. You wouldn't have a purpose.
No.
Yeah. And so it's not an option.
It's interesting to say that to become a billionaire, you have to help all those people. That's the way that I always have seen it. And I guess you guys have as well. But there's this whole eat the rich crowd on TikTok and, you know, people hating on rich people. What do you think about that? Because it does seem to be something that's growing now.
Yeah. I think they don't understand how money works. And I don't know if they've ever met most rich people because it depends. Let's define rich. Apparently, 75 grand a year makes you happy, according to studies, which I think is utter nonsense. There are some people, and I know many people like this. I actually really respect this. There's a part of me that'd like to be like this. I just can't. But someone who's worth 2 million and drives a, you know, a nice German saloon car and is not ostentatious at all, just lives a nice, humble life, and they spend much less than they earn. I really respect that sort of low-level millionaire. It's just, I like things too much. I like travel, I like cars, I like watches, I like but growing things. So I just can't be that. So you've got the low-level millionaires, and then you've got the big rich, and then you've got the super rich. Mm. Now, someone interviewed me earlier, and they said, well, you know, the rich don't trickle the money down to the poor. I said, yes, they do. It's called tax because that's what the tax system is supposed to do. So the rich are pumping billions into our economy. Oh, but they don't spend it wisely. If a billionaire came, you know, to your, is this village, city, town?
Yes, it's a town.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're near Canterbury City, okay. But this is
so
a town, yeah.
There's a billionaire expo in Canterbury. How much money is coming to Canterbury that weekend? I mean, I'm there, you're there. So they bring all this economy and finance, like if you have a lot of tourism. And, you know, even if they're paying less percentage of tax, they're still paying way more money in tax. So I think, here's what I think. Don't knock anyone, especially on TikTok, for fuck's sake. Get a life. Don't
some of the comments on TikTok.
It's just crazy.
Like we've got one where it's like, oh, these lads just wanted to start a podcast. Should we start one?
Yeah.
You know, they just don't really look at the full picture of things, do they?
No, they don't.
So narrow-minded.
It was like, I quoted something that people think that I learned from a movie, which is probably true. But it's like, even if I did learn that from a movie, so what? Like, consume the knowledge and learn from it in everything you watch, and don't just sit there being a consumer. Yeah. Like, what's wrong with that?
Well, this is it. You understand the difference between a producer and a consumer. Yeah, and most people who are in the comments are consumers. I just think a good way to live your life is to not judge until you've tried it. So I've been broke and I've been rich. And people say money doesn't make you happy. Fucking does. Because I am a much happier rich person with what I can do. And if that makes me sound like a twat to a few people on TikTok, well, bring it on. Like, I don't care, because I like people, oh, Rob, you obsess about money. Nowhere near as much as I did when I was broke and I couldn't afford anything and I have to think about money all the time. You know, once you've got enough, now some people are like, okay, I just want enough money to live a good, humble life. Great, and I really respect that. In a way, I'd like to be that. It would be easy. I won't get my cars tracked. But it's just not me.
Would you agree that it's like, it's a different kind of stress now? Like when you're broke and you don't know how you're going to make ends meet, that's just a completely different kind of stress.
Yeah, I like this stress better than that stress.
Yeah,
because I've tried both the stresses. I like this stress better. You know, the thing is as well, right? It's naive to think you can have all the upside with none of the downside. You can't have all the money and none of the jealousy and the envy and, you know, the possible criminality and stuff. It's just not the way the world works. So yeah, whatever stresses this life brings, as long as it doesn't get in really badly, of course, I'd hate if something happened to my family or something. But that aside, I'll take this stress any day.
Do you earn money to spend it now, or is it more just a measuring stick, you know, to see how well you're doing in the world of business against other business people? Or is it more because you want that next thing, or do you have everything that you want?
Yeah, I don't really measure myself against anyone else anymore. Like if I had peers in business, I wouldn't care if they're worth less or more than me, net worth wise. You know, most people either don't want you to know their net worth, which was me, or they exaggerate their net worth. I had someone once, you know him, I won't say his name, but he said, I like to think my net worth is 25 million. Well, then it's not. Yeah. If you like to think it is, I like to think I have 12-inch penis, but I don't. So, like, people, there's just what, you know, it's just not. Sorry, what was the question again?
Do you make money to spend, or is it to measure yourself against other business people?
I don't measure myself against other business people anymore. I probably did when I started. I now like to measure myself against where do I want to go in my life. So, for example, I've had 17 years of doing loads of stuff. And actually, I've got this goal that by the age of 50, maybe I'll be one of the most specialized people in the world around money. So I've just written one money book called Money Matrix. I've nearly finished another one called Money Loves You. And that's what, you know, think of all the money experts in the world. Well, you got Martin Lewis in the UK. You maybe got Kiyosaki. But you can't think of more than five. You can think of plenty of real estate people. You can think of plenty of personal development people. So that's a worthy goal, because I could make a big difference on the planet. Doesn't really matter what net worth my peers are. I love buying shit. I can't help it. It's like,
I fuck with that so heavy. I really do.
Yeah, you've been trying to get dad to spend more money. And I think since we've been friends as well, you got me to spend more money.
It does my head in. I mean, I can't stand to see it when rich people don't spend money. I mean, I don't know, like I've been really broke and you just see the things that other people have. And it's like, it's my drive. Like, obviously I care about purpose and what I do is important to me. And you know, what we do together is important. But ultimately, you know, I want to make money. And if it wasn't making money, then I wouldn't do it.
Well, you know, what I've learned as I've got a bit older, I'm 44, is I just used to buy any old shit and waste my money. Now I choose the things I like. Love watches, love McQueen, love Louboutin, you know, love certain artists, love certain cars. I just go deep on those, really deep on those. I saw Kevin Leary, this was brilliant. He said, you know, watches is a disease. It's a disease I've got. Being a watch collector is a curse. It's a disease. I mean, the only reason I work is to buy watches, and then I'd show my wife and she hates it. And I can relate to that shit. I've got so many cars that I don't need. I haven't got a garage big enough for the cars. I can't stop buying cars.
Does it still fulfill you though? Once you've got your five top favorite cars, does number 6, 7, 8 matter to you as much?
It matters. Doesn't matter as much. It doesn't fulfill me. I'm not buying cars to fulfill. For years, people have been asking me where I buy my watches. Many of you may know I'm a watch collector, I'm a watch investor, and those as an asset class have done me very well in the last 15 years. I have never shared where I source my watches from or my watch dealer until now. My watch dealer used to be a professional footballer for Manchester United, and he formed a watch brand called Broadwalk. And he sources the higher-end brands like Rolex, Audemars Piguet, Patek Philippe and Richard Mille. I trust him, I've used him for many years, and recently we've done a partnership. Hence, I'm inviting you, if you want to start investing in watches and protect your money from the banks and inflation, to check out Broadwalk. That's Broadwalk. And the website is broadwalkgroup.com. The email is sales@broadwalkgroup.com. And please don't share this, but his number is 07496 878153. Obviously, only message him if you're serious about buying and investing in the higher-end watches. People have been asking me for years, and for the first time ever, you can get access to my watch team. For me, I got a wife for that. I mean, I own a 1987 Ferrari Testarossa. Apparently, they're worth more than 200 grand now. I paid a lot less than that. And that was what I put on my wall when I was a kid, when I used to work in my dad's pub, putting bottles on the shelves. What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
I just bought a 1989 Bad Boys 911 Turbo. Like, the thing is sex on four wheels. Careful. I just bought my wife an Aston Martin DBS. And she's like, she never would have bought anything like that for herself. And so, what are you going to spend your money on? I also invest a lot.
Investment as well. Like you said, your Ferrari went up.
Yeah, and I use income from companies and assets to buy depreciating liabilities. I don't buy depreciating liabilities with tax paid money. So that'll go up, and that'll go up. And I've figured out what.
So hang on.
Yeah, let's take
a pause here, right? We were going to leave this to the end, but we've been trying to convince Tom to buy a watch.
Oh, this is
so
my favorite subject, Tom.
I'm all ears.
Go on, convince him.
A great watch is a door opener.
Yeah.
And depending on the kind of watch you wear, will attract the kind of person you want to attract. So if you want to attract someone who, you know, maybe they're just getting into watches and they're getting into a bit of money, you know, you might go for an entry-level Rolex. If you go for a sports model, you know, Daytona, GMT.
Would you say this is an entry level?
I'd say that's just a bit above. You don't get that in the window normally.
Yeah, this was my entry level. I didn't want to go.
Oh, no, but that's a good entry level it's not just a plain Datejust or anything like that. That's the Batman GMT, is it?
Yeah.
So would you say that's like an entry level investment rather than watch? Would any other watch lower in price go up in value?
Possibly, yes.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah. I'm hoping these swatches will go up. I've got every single one, and I'm hoping they'll go up. And some of them are only 300 quid.
Yeah.
But, I mean, depending on what you got that against list price, Rolex at the moment, I mean, they've dropped, but they're still really high.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the one entry-level watch you want, if you can wait, is the Daytona. That's the one. Because, you know, it's like the sports model, but it's the best sports model.
And how much is a Daytona going for at the moment?
Oh, you could get a 1990s one for probably 16, 17 grand.
Okay.
I had plenty of them. I buy them and just stick them away. And I sold out at 25 and I bought back in at 17. And I've bought and sold in on Daytona since. My 79 one, which is my birth year, it went up to 85 grand. So you're probably, and that's not the new one, you're more like 25. Obviously, when this people listen to this, it might have changed. You're a bit less on a GMT, which is that. And I like the GMTs with some color in, you know, because the Sprite or the Batman or the Pepsi just jumps out at you a bit more than, say, your dad's one who's got, looks like, is it a Sub?
It's a Submariner, yeah.
Yeah, Sub. Yeah. It depends on your budget. But if you start with a sports Rolex, which is Sub, Sea Dweller, which are the conventional ones, GMT, that's a great start. And you're gonna open some doors, and you know, and then you move up to Daytona, and then you go up to Royal Oak, and then because most people who have a Rolex, not all but most, a lot of people who have a Rolex, they got given it as a birthday present or whatever. But if you want a Royal OKP, which is what Curtis got on there, you've kind of...
Now you're taking more serious.
Yeah.
We've spoken to a few people and they've got different perceptions on this. But let's say someone's going to spend 10, 15, 20K on a watch. How much money should that person have, cash in the bank, to justify, do you know what, it's time to buy a watch?
Well, I don't see any reason why, if you've got 20 to 25 grand in the bank,
yeah,
that you couldn't put 10 of that into a watch.
I would buy this if I had 20 grand.
You would buy whatever that watch costs. You
definitely have a lot more than that. So
yeah, it's
go
not,
on, get yourself a watch.
What's your net worth? What do you say? Do you have any cash in the bank?
Yeah.
Okay. And do you have more than a lower level price watch of cash in the bank?
Oh, yeah.
So that currently is going down more than that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if they tell you inflation is 7 or 8%. And strike it big. Last time I came, you didn't have that, did you?
No.
I know. You need to bling it up.
Do you know what? There's a couple of reasons. It's not necessarily the affordability thing, because as you said, even if you've got 20 grand to your name, just buy the 10 grand watch.
Yeah.
There's two things. One is, I think, I don't know, I quite enjoy the fact of I could get one, but I haven't yet. And one day I'll get one, you know, I hit a certain milestone and I'll justify it and it'll mean something rather than I'm just getting it for the sake of it.
But that could be the next watch onwards.
The milestone for your first watch could be jumping on the podcast.
The peer pressure is palpable.
The other thing is,
you're buying a watch at the end of this episode.
I will get a watch probably in the next few months for sure. But knowing that I'm walking around with 20 grand on my wrist, and if that gets stolen or broken or lost, that's really going to piss me off.
Well, you can get it insured, and it doesn't cost you a huge amount. I mean, these do. These are hard to get insured, but you can get 20 grand watch insured pretty easily. So you've got that. If you're really worried, do what I do and get a nice watch. And when you're in London, put the the moon swatch. I'll wear the blue one. That's the most rare one. Cost me 1,200 quid, something like that. And do that. You can get around that. But a good Rolex will go up 5 to 8% a year, 5 to 8%.
Okay.
And that's what, if they say inflation is 8, then money's going down 8% and a Rolex is going up 8%.
And you can enjoy the fuck out of it.
I guess to go against myself, you can sell that tomorrow if you wanted to and get, if you needed the money and you've got the money back.
You can sell it.
Right? He's selling himself on the watch.
So no, do you know what? I actually don't need selling that much because I know I am going to get one. It is on my list to do, but it's good for people to understand maybe the benefits. It's not just, there's more to it than just getting it for the sake of it.
What I learned, because I've always liked watches, you could go into a Meagher or Breitling and you could buy something for 8 grand in the window and it's worth 4 grand in 3 years.
Yeah.
Or you can wait a little bit longer and start in a Rolex and you can hold your money. The ones in the window, not so much. But the sports stuff is held really well. They'll go over list, the Daytona. And what you'll end up doing probably is you'll just end up trading up. And, you know, every two or three, as men, I don't know, but it's quite hard to treat yourself. I don't know. Anyone who buys me stuff, they always buy shit. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't know what to buy me. So I have to buy myself the stuff. I remember my first girlfriend would buy me neck shirts and I like McQueen. And so this is a gift, you know, you can buy yourself and every 3 years or 5 years. I get that some people don't get it. But hopefully those that don't get it get that it's better to make 5 to 8% up on a watch than it is 5 to 8% down on cash in the bank. Cash in the bank is one of the worst places to leave your money. People don't realize this, but since lockdown, money's gone down by a third, at least. So if you had £1 million in the bank, you've actually got 666,000 left.
What percentage of your net worth is held in cash in the bank?
Jack shit.
Less than five?
Less than £4 million.
Okay.
Is in cash. And I might up that a bit because properties have started to come down and I want to hoover up. But no, I mean, you know, I've got company money and I've got watches and I've got stock market and art and I'm trying to get money out of the bank account without drawing it.
So you're buying the watches through the company money?
Right. I have to be clear about this. I'll tell you this as an exclusive. Number one, you have to get fucking good advice from a good accountant.
Yeah.
I do not wear the watches that I own in my company because that's a duality of purpose. And they would be like, well, then you're just basically getting around the tax.
Yeah.
So I have some of my watches owned in my company as a company asset stored in a safety deposit box all legitimized by my accountant.
Could you get away with it if you bought the watch and wore it on a podcast? And then that way you're it's part of your costume.
Right. So I'll ask my accountant. He'll probably say that's a bit of a risk you might not want to take. So,
I bought this personally just for the tax.
Yeah, well, and I wear the ones that I own personally. But what I will do sometimes is like, my company's got a watch I want and I'll buy it off it. And then sometimes I'll be like, but I want the one and I'll sell it and I'll buy and sell them. So I might sell this to the company at some point and pull a few out of the safe. Now, clothing, again, this is, I probably shouldn't talk about this, but I'm going to talk about it, but the context must stay in. So I always said, why can't I wear clothes? Why can't I put them through the business? Well, because there's duality of purpose, this duality of purpose thing. I said, well, what if I only wear it for work? Mm. And I was told no. And anyway, I went to McQueen, and I won't say their names, but there's like quite a few famous people I know shopping McQueen. And I got to the bottom through the store managers that they all buy their clothes through company. They get them bought for them. And I'm like, well, fucking hell, if Graham Norton could do it, I can do it. I might not be him, but I'm going to try. So anyway, I said, can you write an invoice in McQueen? They said yes. And I went to my accountant and said, what do I have to do to not have duality of purpose? And he says, well, it has to be work only. It has to be your brand. And you have to be able to prove it's work only. And he said, I said, how do I do that? And he said, well, if you put a wardrobe in your office, that's a good start. So I have my McQueen clothes, because some of the McQueen's jackets are like $5,000. Because if I had to pay that after tax, that's $10,000. So anyway, there's a wardrobe in the office with my McQueen stuff. And I only wear it for work. But I don't have a social life anyway. And when I go out for dinner, it's out for work.
I guess the lines are blurred in your profession, right?
Well, they are in mine. My accountant has said yes. Like, but the thing is, he didn't come to me with this, but I figured it out. And he has said yes. And if he says yes, and he's signing his name against it, and I've got my tax investigation insurance, which you should all have, by the way, then I'm all right. And if I'm not all right, the HMRC are going to hear this on a podcast and go, oh, wait a minute, and they're going to tell me otherwise, or they're going to change the rules or whatever.
So I've got a decent amount of money in a holding company at the moment. What do you think I should do with it? Should I buy a property? Should I do the watch thing? What's the best move?
Right. I probably wouldn't. You need an accountant to underwrite what you do.
Yeah.
And what I'm doing is not normal. I'm being creative because what I don't want to do is get a watch, but have to draw $60,000 out, give $30,000 of it to the government. And then, by the way, I don't mind paying my taxes. Mm. Just don't think they're fair. So, I mean, here's the irony, right? They'll let you put the money. If you get a, I don't know if you've got a Charles Stanley account. Get a Charles Stanley account or a Vanguard account in your company, and you can invest it into the stock market. Apparently, the S&P 500's quite outperformed the UK FTSE 100.
Yeah.
But my business partner's like, yeah, but because the FTSE is underperformed compared to the S&P, he's going to keep dumping into the 100. So we put a lot of our company money into the FTSE 100 and the S&P 500.
So is that a special company account that you have to get with Vanguard?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. You could just get it with, I don't think Hargreaves Lansdown do it, but because that's personal, but because that's the one I like. But definitely Charles Stanley do. And yeah, you can invest your own company money, which if you think about it, is smarter to put it in the S&P 500 than it is in the bank. So that's a fail safe.
Yeah.
Now, I actually think I can beat the market with my watch knowledge. So if I was challenged, I'd be like, well, I think as my fiduciary duty to the company is to maximize the money. And I think I can buy, I think my Black Laurent and my Tom York art and my APs and whatever else, I think they could do 8-10% a year. So I'm acting in the company's best interest. But there must not be any duality of purpose. I.e., if you buy anything like that in a company, if you buy a piece of art in a company, you can't go and hang it on your own wall. So I buy art and I store it. So Charles Stanley, S&P 500, FTSE 100. Property is great.
Yeah, because I mean, at the moment, I am literally just leaving it in there, thinking maybe I'll do property. Maybe I didn't know about the watch thing, but maybe I'll invest it in the S&P 500 now.
Well, I think the S&P 500 and the FTSE 100, probably spread it around a bit. Much better than in the bank, because the bank guarantees are really low. You've probably got way more money in the bank than is the bank guarantee.
And it's about 80 grand, isn't it? It's very low.
And by the way, the people need to listen, it's per group. And people don't understand that RBS own 8 different banks. Mm. So if 3 of your banks are with RBS, it's 80 grand.
I thought
it's
it was
not
per account.
No.
I've got different accounts at the same bank.
No, no.
Lloyds is RBS, I think. I know for a fact Lloyds is.
Yeah. And Lloyds, NatWest. Yeah.
You need to get rid of that money.
Yeah. So
I'll put that on the to-do list.
Yeah, you want to spread that around. You can obviously buy commercial property in your company. And commercial property, rents are solid at the moment. So the values are quite good.
I thought about buying a studio and then renting it to myself.
I don't think that's a bad idea to look at. Good accountant, get it structured properly. Or buying a studio and renting it out to other people, maybe.
Yeah, maybe have different rooms for other people and then we can use a room like house hacking, but with a studio.
I think that'll blow up in London. We're looking for a studio in London, you know, to make something like this our own, because it's in Peterborough, but people don't come there. We need it in London. So... yeah, I mean, property's always been good for me.
So anyway, you've always branded yourself as the disruptive entrepreneur. What makes you more disruptive than other entrepreneurs?
Good question. I like to think, I like you're asking me, so I don't know. It's for others to judge. But I definitely like to think we do things a bit differently. So I remember when we got into property, nothing against anyone in a grey suit and a white shirt who was 25 years older than me, but that's who everyone was. And Mark and I had this spiky hair. We were in our mid-20s. I don't even... Mark had pubes at that point.
And is this your business partner? Yeah.
And we had these stripy shirts and we were going along, you know, giving it the big one. And it was just fresh. It was, you know, I'm obviously 44 now, so... it's harder to do that now than when I was younger. So that I broke the world record for the longest public speech, not once but twice. No one did that in my industry. I just had a boxing match with a guy 20 kilos heavier than me. No one else has done that in my industry. Mm. And I could, I'm not Uber or Airbnb. You know, obviously they are true disruptors. But I do like to shake things up a bit, yeah, and just be a bit different. I think being disruptive can also be about having the courage to be yourself. The amount of shit I get for these shirts, honestly, the shit people say, bondage, gun holster, you know, the lot. But
my dad was actually saying before you arrived, he's like, oh, I should have got a holster to wear. Yeah. And then I'll just whip it out and be like, right, have you got your holster?
Yeah.
Where does that feeling of needing to be different or disruptive or fresh, where does that come from?
Not being noticed enough as a child is the honest answer. I was the fat kid at school. My parents worked a lot, even from when I was like one in the cot. My therapist found this out about me. I spent a lot of time when I was young on my own. And it created this deep need to connect with people because I didn't have it. And so, you know, I hate when I found out about myself in my 20s and 30s, I was like, ugh, you know, I do these things for attention. Oh, I buy cars for attention, I wear clothes for attention. But then I thought, I'm actually not a bad person. I quite like who I am. And everyone wants significance and love. And we all get our attention in some ways. Even people who don't want attention, they get attention in their way that they don't want attention. So I realized I'm no different to anyone else. And so now I'm just okay with that. I completely admire someone who's a 2 million millionaire, stays under the radar and drives a German BMW. I just know that's not me. So I'm okay with me and I'm okay with them. You'll never see me criticize them. You'll probably see them criticize me. So naturally I tried to stand out more. And now it's just who I am. Like the thought of fitting in to me is, I could, no.
Are you glad in a way that you had that childhood where you didn't have certain aspects because it's now turned into a positive?
Yeah. Yeah, I think if I'd have had, I mean, look, my parents are great. So this is not me. They did nothing wrong. But if I'd have had, oh, you know, Robbie Rob and lots of love and everything, I got everything I needed, I'd probably be a sport little twat and I'd probably be broke and I'd probably be juvenile and dependent and sponging off someone. Or I could be, because I nearly turned into that when I was in my mid-20s. And I didn't like that about myself. So yeah, that, you know, you're if it doesn't break you, it makes you. And I think the key to being successful is finding those things in your past that you're holding on to that you perceive are downsides and turning them into upsides. And you meet anyone who's really successful, they've had some shit. And actually, sometimes a privileged upbringing is the worst thing to create a hustler.
How bad was the bullying at school?
I think it at times it was, I mean, I never got like, I had a few little fights, not many. It was mostly verbal. And then I made it twice as bad in my own head. I mean, I even remember meeting some of my later school friends and I'd lost a lot of weight and they're like, wow. And they're like, wow, Rob, you've done well. And I was like, oh yeah, do you remember this, this, this? They didn't even remember it. Wow. Yeah, they didn't remember the thing, like I would say the things that they would had said to me. And this was like an exorcism for me, for them being there. Hey, look at me, I'm not fat now, motherfucker. you know, I remember when you did this and that. And they're like, no, I don't remember that.
So do you look back at them fondly now for bullying you?
Yeah.
Or you still,
yeah.
You do?
Yeah, yeah.
It helped you become the person you are now?
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely do. And like I said, if you're 12 and you're at school and you're the fattest kid in the year, the easiest thing to do is to call me a fat fuck. So like they had their own problems as well. One of the guys used to wet the bed. One of them is snot used to pour out. You know, fat was just my version. But for me, it gave me exclusion. And inclusion is what I've continually been seeking. But now I try and do it in a way that's useful and useful to other people. There's nothing wrong with wanting to build your own brand. There's nothing wrong with wanting to have a lot of followers and make a lot of impact, as long as what you're saying is useful to people.
Was there a definitive moment when you were like, fuck this, I'm going to make a change, I'm going to lose the weight? Or was it a gradual thing that happened?
No, the weight was pretty drastic. So I used to cry to my mum every weekend at school about age 12 or 13 to take me out of the school. And there's two reasons. One, because at that age, when I was 13, so this is 30 years ago, when you went up to senior school, you were going to get decked by the older kids. And I was scared of the beating. Like they'd been giving us some shit. And I didn't want to be the fat kid. And I thought, well, if I can beg my mum to take me out of school, I've got 8 weeks, because that's the length of the holiday, to lose all the weight and go to a new school as a new person. And I lost all the weight. I lost 3 stone in 8 weeks. And I went to a new school as the same person, but not being fat anymore. So it was surprising to me, because I was like, well, wait a minute. I thought I'd be confident. And I thought, you know, and like, I'm the same guy. I'm just not fat.
Did you still get bullied?
No.
No.
No. And I actually like got girls and stuff. So like, you know, if anyone's a bit overweight, get in the fucking gym. It worked for me. It was the best thing for me. But inside, the need to be, you know, loved and noticed and people please and conflict avoid. Cause I had to unlearn all those things in business. You can't do all that in business and succeed. Now, that was still there. I still feel it come out a bit every now and again. Like I go on the street and ask people questions. Still a bit like, I'm like, how many custard pies am I going to have to take in the face of people not wanting to, you know, and like, it doesn't matter, does it? But I feel
you're,
like a 13-year-old boy.
With public shooting, aren't you?
You like it or don't like it?
No, I don't like it. Yeah.
Like, when we're filming anything with Dad, he can't watch. He has to go somewhere else. Yeah, like, he finds it so
sometimes I'll even just turn around. You know, like sometimes that can be enough. But
What is it that makes you have that reaction?
It's just like, you know, if you have to, if it was like we were just doing something like kind of funny and like we're just like rolling with it, then that's okay, cool, whatever. But it's like when you deliver a line and it's not quite right, and then you have to do it again, and then it's not quite right, and then maybe you have to do it again, and it's, oh, fucking hell, you know, we're in public and this is taking 3 attempts now. It's like, come on now, like, get it together. So I think that's what I don't like. But something I was going to ask is, we've spoke a lot about business and money, so I think it's important to define, like, what you actually do and how you make your millions.
Yeah, so I started in property in 2006, and I bought 20 properties in that year whilst I had a full-time job selling properties to other people in a property company. And on the side, as the side hustle, my business partner and I, we started buying properties together. He funded them. I was the hustle. He was the money. So we bought 20 in that year. Then we started Progressive Property on our own. The next year, we bought another 30. We have 340 now. And we have the Progressive Lets, which has 1,350 tenants. And then once I started to feel like I knew a bit about property, I wrote a book, which did well in the property world. And then we started the training business. And I'm hoping that'll do 25 million this year. I think it's more realistic it'll do 23 in sales. And that's sort of the little cash machine-y bit. And then what we do often is take all that money and just dump it into property and dump it into property.
Is that a 50-50 joint venture?
Yeah, everything. Everything. Someone paid me crypto today and I said to Mark, what's your wallet address? I give him half. Whenever we get book royalties, I give him half. But he manages, I mean, we did a 99 apartment block, I think he just got it valued at 22 million, in at 12. So good. And Yeah, I've got half of that.
What's the key to a good partnership, though? Because I always hear that saying, like, the worst ship to sail is a partnership. Because something
who the fuck
always
said
goes
that?
Wrong. Well, it's actually his old boss.
Yeah, and how successful is your old boss? How many millions is he worth?
I was literally just about to say that. But I have heard it a few times, but it doesn't come from a very wise man.
So your dad, one of his biggest regrets is he didn't have a partner earlier who had more risk threshold, because he says he's quite risk averse.
I don't know how dad would have dealt with a partner. Maybe if he had one a bit sooner, he would have been a bit different. But even working in a partnership with my dad now, it is hard. Like, if we weren't family, I don't think it would have lasted this long.
Well, that's interesting. Look, I've had one shoot, one score with a business partner, and it's been 17 years. And to me, the secret is someone with a similar vision, but different skills. And so working with your dad, you're very generation apart, and that might be a vision difference in terms of what kind of content. So that might be a conflict.
Yeah.
Because skills marry up perfectly.
Yeah, you're
obviously,
very
me
different.
On the video side, yeah. Dad on the knowledge side, it does work very well. But yeah, the generational difference might be where we're having a few arguments. I mean, it's fine because we're family and we get around it. But I'm thinking if we weren't family, we might have been like, well, at this point.
Perhaps that's a positive as well, though, because you're getting two very different perspectives that you can almost marry together and weigh up. Yeah. Someone has to make that final decision, of course, but it gives you, I didn't think about it that way. You know, different
well, it's working, clearly. Yeah. I mean, no business partnership is easy. And, you know, there'll be things about your business partner that you would want to change. But if you think about it, if you want to change them, you're with the wrong person. Because you, whatever you want them to change is you. So with my business partner, I used to try and change him a bit, try and get him to be a bit more exciting. He used to try and change me a bit, try and get me to be a bit more careful with my money, and especially as he has half of it. And we stopped doing that now. We don't try and change each other. We're very compartmentalized. He's over there managing the property empire. I'm over here doing the he hates content. He'd never do anything like this. Mm. He hates it. If he heard me talk about all this accountant stuff, he would squirt. I'm banking on him not hearing this. And if he hears this, he's going to tell me off. He's going to tell me, just don't answer the question. Yeah, it's right. Move on next. But I'm not like him. So we're very different, but we're similar age.
Yeah.
We have a similar vision. We both love property. We both love business. I mean, he's technical, analytical. He's brilliant with legal. No one's ever going to do it. And we have won every legal case we've ever had because of him. If it was me, we'd have lost them all.
You said too much online and then it'd have come back to
bite you. Fucked myself. Yeah. And Mark, he's brilliant technically and I'm better strategically. Yeah.
Do you think it can work if you both have similar skills and then you outsource the other skills that you're missing, or is that just doomed from the start?
I don't think it's doomed if you're really vested in it together, but you've got to know where you're overlapping and somehow not overlap. Because if two of you do the same thing, one of you isn't needed. I think opposing skill set is the best, ideally. Similar vision, opposing skill set. If not that, if you have similar skills, similar vision, and higher opposing skill sets in the business, it can work, it just doesn't usually.
If you do have disagreements, how do you navigate that?
So we've both learned, my business partner and I, because when we used to first have them, I'd be like, well, you're late. And he's like, yeah, because it's shit working with you. Fuck off. And he'd walk out and I wouldn't see him for 3 days. And like, we didn't really know how to handle each other. But now I know every tell on Mark's face. And if I can see a certain part of his face move, I'm like, right, he's triggered here.
I need to learn every tell on Mark's face as well.
This is good to learn, because I actually think a good partner is someone who makes an effort to be a good partner rather than tell you to be a good partner. And I try and be that with my business partner. And I know he tries to do his job well. I try and do my job well. But if you think about it, there's no point in arguing for the sake of it. And if you're going to agree, it should be over big, important things, not over bollocks. And so we've learned over the years, we've probably had two or three major disagreements, and they were over big things that warranted, you know, the heated disagreements. Generally, if he feels it more than me, I'll go with him. If I feel it strongly, he'll go with me. If it's more his area, I'll just be a sounding board. But my goal is to let my business partner express himself and say what he needs to say, and it feels safe to do that. And him not feel threatened. And I can take responsibility for that. It's funny because my business partner speaks to people like, he's your old fucking headmaster. And it's like, this is your expense form. It's a bit high. We need to get this down. You haven't dated it. You haven't checked. And like, did you understand what I just said? Even when we got loads of credit cards, yeah, as you get them. And he even put P for the personal ones and B for the business ones on the back.
That as well.
Yeah. And like, and he's doing all this shit for me. And I think, you're so fucking patronizing, you are. Like my old headmaster. But he doesn't know my old headmaster. But in his model of the world, he's like, well, you don't know the difference and you're not getting it right. And I'm only helping you. So I try and see it more from his point of view now. He has to deal with all my insurances. I crashed a 200 grand Ferrari and he had to deal with the repair, 105 grand. It's a sure, I'm always the one crashing, speeding fines, insurances, all that. And he has to deal with all that. And you know, and that's chaos. But I'm out there in the public domain, which he hates. So he gets that benefit.
So we're talking about accidents there. What's the biggest financial mistake you feel like you've made in your whole career?
Yeah, I mean, crashing a 200 grand Ferrari and having a 105 grand repair bill and being on the world's most expensive crashes website is my worst.
Really?
Yeah, here's something. I'm, yeah,
that's an achievement, if anything, to have made the website.
I crashed it into News International building, you know, where the Sun and the Mail and the Mirror are in Peterborough. And within 2 minutes, the reporters were over and they'd got a story. They made me look like such a twat. They're like, millionaire crashes Fivedale Ferrari, but it's all right because his other car is a Porsche. And like the hate comments. Like, wanker got a Ferrari, can't even. Honestly, there was.
All publicity good publicity? Marketing.
Yeah, this was good. This was quite good, really. I mean, not all publicity. Ask Jeffrey Epstein if all publicity is good publicity. I don't agree that all publicity is good publicity. But as long as it's not really damaging, it's probably not really that much of an issue. So I'm really proud to say we've never lost any money. We've never lost investor money. We've never lost company money. We've probably, you know, made a few duff marketing-based spend decisions. Maybe we've hired some staff that didn't turn out that well. But, you know, touch wood, no real major. I know it makes for a better story if someone lost 20 billion. But I don't really like being flippant about money. I like talking about it and I want everyone to feel safe and comfortable to go and make it. But I'm very careful with money and my money and especially other people's money. And like in America, it's like, oh yeah, well, you know, that's the game. Oh, unlucky. You lost 10 million with me, unlucky. Oh, I need another 10 million. I can't get my head around that.
Do you feel like average entrepreneurs do much better than they would over here in America? Because when we went over there, we felt like lots of these people making lots of money aren't actually that smart. From the surface, it looked
right.
That way.
Interesting. Well, the first thing I think is I think it really depends on the state, because some states like Texas are really becoming a hotbed with low state taxes. And, you know, on the West, which it used to always be, we're going there to interview Will I Am. And, you know, I think a lot of people are moving away from the West now. So I think it depends where you are. I've only been to America a few times and I've actually... There's a research for my book. I've asked my friend who's moved to America and he loves it there. You know, what is the fundamental difference between the Brits and the Americans? You know, are we grumpy and skeptical and tall poppy syndrome and all that? Maybe you don't have to be as smart in America to be successful.
I think it may be because there's a bigger market there available.
Well,
you don't have to
a lot
be
more
good.
People, a lot bigger exactly. Economy. I mean, all the creators and influencers in America, all the mentors I've had in America. So, yeah, you're in a better marketplace for
and
sure.
And it even just seems like American brands will like throw more money for sponsorships. You know, UK
for
companies
sure.
That we deal with have much
oh, they're harder,
budgets.
Are they?
As in like...
UK companies.
Much more difficult.
Yeah, because the market's not there, is it?
Yeah.
So it makes sense.
So just in every aspect, it just seems like it's just easier.
Yeah, I sometimes think, you know, with how long I've been doing it and my relative size here... instead of being 23, 25 in sales, we'd probably be 150 US million there. Because, I mean, that's what Grant is.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been doing it nearly as long as him. And there'd be no reason why we couldn't have been at that kind of level.
And I was literally just about to ask you that. Like, how big is this property training market? Because when you say 23 million, I find that quite staggering in itself, that in the UK you can turn over that. And in not only are you turning over that, you've obviously got competitors like the person that you fought, Samuel Leeds. He's obviously doing the similar thing and turning over money as well. So how far can that go?
well, I know it can go as far as our best ever year. Can it for one company go further than our best ever year if we are the biggest? I don't know.
What percentage of the market do you think you have at the moment?
I don't know. I'd love to know. And I've always tried to figure that out, but you just can't get to the bottom of it. It's very difficult.
What's it going to look like in 5-10 years time?
Well, it's either going to look like sold, give me a load of money, thanks.
What would it take for you to sell your business though, in terms of money though?
Fuck you money and the right person to sell it to.
What's fuck you money?
My accountant, my wife and my lawyer. What I think is fair for my company is 10 times profit. Any less, piss off. I don't need the money. I got loads of benefits wrapped up in my companies. In my lettings company, it charges my own properties 5%. If some company came in and sliced and diced it, they're going to kick us out and charge us 12.5%. So I've got loads of cars in an LLP. I got so much benefit. But, you know, someone like Grant or someone like Russell Brunson, we'd be perfect for them. That we're already made purchase for them. I've never talked to them about it. And I'm not really thinking about that. That's, you know, you were asking what's the future, but because what I'd probably do, honestly, I'd probably dump all that into content and building my brand. Like if I took 35, 40 mil, 50 mil, I don't know, whatever, we'll see what the multipliers are. You could make a really big brand with that because I don't really need the money for myself. And my wife wants a new house because, of course, 7 bedrooms is not enough.
No, of course not.
But, you know, maybe I'll push the ceiling until the ceiling is there. Maybe I'll take it over to America.
Would you ever think about acquiring a business in America that maybe isn't at Grant's level, but has some kind of presence there that then you can build out?
Yeah, maybe. And I'm talking to some people in America. Maybe. Yeah, I think if we were near where we are now pre-lockdown, then lockdown happened and it just changed the game. And I guess the first thing I've got to think is, where's the new ceiling post-lockdown? Because that's like, if you're playing snakes and ladders, that was a 95 square snake, lockdown was. And we're probably back up to about square 75, 80, something like that. But yeah, I don't know for sure. I mean, we've got a business training company as well, and that does quite well. But that could be a lot bigger. I like not having everything figured out because then it's exciting.
Mm. Mm. So bringing it back to the viewers quickly, if someone wanted to start a side hustle or go into business now, what would your piece of advice be to them?
Tell them to do what you boys do.
Do some content.
Yeah, if they're following you. Mm. So obviously you've asked a question on your show, which means they're following you. And if they're in your comments going, instead of actually starting their own content, then, you know, like, I don't want to sound like an old bastard, but it was manual labor when I started work. You had to build shit. Like, your dad built this table.
Yeah, he was a carpenter.
Yeah, there you go. Mm. And now you can, I mean, you've got great equipment, but you don't even need that. You need a laptop, a phone, and you can build a following on TikTok and Instagram and Facebook and YouTube. And, maybe get a few brand deals or maybe start turning on monetization when it's right. I mean, you want to give value up front first.
Would you do that to make money first and then roll it into something else? Would it be the cash generator? Or do you see that as more as a long-term business? Because we see so many people get into YouTube and then they're stuck in the content treadmill. Oh, I've got to make this video next. And lots of them are trying to become entrepreneurs because they don't want to do YouTube anymore or content creation.
Well, that kind of sucks. Because, you know, let's be honest, in ranking fun jobs, doing videos and talking about yourself's got to rank up there. So it kind of sucks. I'd say to anyone, if they're trying to do YouTube and they're feeling a bit on the grind, every business is hard. Take a look at yourself. You've got probably a potentially good business there. Just, you know, look at the analytics more. Copy the influencers you like without ripping them off and just try and make every video a bit different. I think there's two ways to do it. I think way number one is start some other business and plow the money into content or make content your business. Obviously, making content your business is a bit different. In an ideal world, we'd all have 5 years making content for free and then we'd turn on the cash button 5 years down the line and it would be millions because you built up the following, you know, like your dad did with how TikTok built everything. And your dad's very patient and he doesn't mind giving a load of free content. if you're 21, maybe you need to be a little bit less patient. But content's where it's at.
So your content is successful because of what you did beforehand. Mark's content is successful because of what he did beforehand. People watch the podcast, I would like to think, because of what we did beforehand. So if you just go straight into the content, what is your USP and why would people watch you?
Very good question. You have to have something useful to talk about. But we've all got something useful to talk about.
I would argue that some people don't, though.
Yeah, we know some people that certainly don't.
You don't have to teach something. So you could have a massive interest in Pokemon, right? So you can talk about Pokemon. You could have an interest in skipping. So you can make skipping videos. Yes. So it's not about, have I got something to teach someone? But whatever you're interested in, talk about it and make content about it, even for entertainment purposes. And there's a market.
Yeah, it depends on the industry. Like if you're talking about Pokemon, then of course, yes, that's much.
Name an industry that you can't, you could be a garden expert and make millions. To be
fair, I guess I'm looking at it like it just seems like everybody these days wants to be like an entrepreneur and everybody seems to be making self-help content.
That is your myopia.
Yeah, that's
the
true
space that you're in. Because I bet if you walk down the high street in Peterborough, that they wouldn't even know what one is.
I try to avoid going there.
Yeah,
a lot of my friends.
Now, this is why you dragged me down to your place.
Look, do you think content's going to be able to make money for years to come? Because so many people are wanting to become YouTubers, like we said. Are there going to be enough brand deals to go around? Because surely that pot isn't going to increase that much more.
Well, I don't look at life like that. I think, is the pot big enough for me and am I good enough to get my slice of the pot? And everyone else,
more competitive.
Yeah, everyone else in the pot or Mr. Average, you know, good luck to them and I'll help them if they want it. But any market I go into, there's enough for me. So every market is competitive. I mean, if you were interviewing a billionaire in insurance, that's way more a competitive industry and a closed shop. You can't get in insurance very easily. You can get into content really easily. I think where we can meet in what we're talking about is be passionate about something or have some knowledge about something or be interesting and different. Because there's some people who are quite, like there's a lot of people go asking rich people how much they earn or going in and say, asking people what car they drive. They may know nothing. They might just be interested in that. And in the end, I mean, you guys have grown very quickly in a very short period of time. I've been doing it a little bit longer, but I think my mistake was I was too much on the how-to content for too long. And I realize you've got to entertain people as well as educate people. And
so, how to grow your audience, but then you need videos to, you know, retain the audience that you already have.
Yeah maybe. I had a loyal following, but we couldn't get it to pop off because I just thought, I want to teach people useful shit.
Yeah, I get that.
And the only stuff that they would engage with was my vacuous, gimmicky nonsense. No, it's not, but that's how I would see it. And I felt quite dirty. So there's got to be some authenticity there. You know, like you said, your dad and myself have been in business a long time. But at the same time, I like to learn from the young guys as well. You guys have done well in a quick time. And you've got Jake and Logan Paul who are, you know, younger than me and they've done really well. So I think if you balance, you start your content, you're probably not going to end up where you start. You start doing what you do, you evolve. And then when you find these things that work for you and you can find your own style, then you double down on it. And sometimes finding your own style can take time. A load of people copied your dad, didn't they? You know, but like he found that style and it would have taken him some testing and doing some flopper videos before you got your first viral one.
Yeah, 100%. So how important do you think starting those other businesses, like for example, KSI, Logan Paul, they've got Prime, you've got Mr. Beast with Feastivals and Mr. Beast Burger. I'm not sure if he's doing that anymore. But how important do you think starting those businesses would be compared to just getting the brand deals and earning money that way?
I think you've got to want to be an entrepreneur and a business person to start your own companies and brands like Prime.
Yeah.
And Mr. Beast Burger. Now, I understand there's some legal issues and bullshit with Mr. Beast Burger, and that'll be a lesson for him. I think the guy's great. I'd love to interview him. But he's still young, and he's you know, that might end up being a bit difficult for him. I think, importantly, like I would never sell Prime because I think it's shit. I would, you know, even if I could become a billionaire, I would never have a gambling company because I think that's wrong. People could say, well, yeah, but you teach stuff and charge people tens of thousands. They can just go on YouTube for free. So I understand another person's point of view. So I think if you there's a business you're really passionate about that you can kick off of your fan base, and to be fair, Logan Paul and KSI, they seem to be enjoying it. I mean, they're great marketers. I don't know how much they get involved in actually making that drink.
Yeah, I probably think they have no involvement.
They're they're just brilliant marketers. But if you're going to start your own business, do something you enjoy. And if there's not, then cut some brand deals.
Is it possible for anyone to be an entrepreneur?
No.
And how do you distinguish someone that should be an entrepreneur and someone that should probably accept that they're not?
If you're so risk averse that you just can't get your head around your mortgage payments and your kids and your car loans, if you... See, I don't like authority and I don't like being told what to do, but a lot of people, they just want to be told what to do. And they like that. And I respect those people. In some ways, life's a lot easier like that. So those kind of people, I'm not trying to convince those kind of people to be entrepreneurs, even though... And also, like my friend and your friend, Simon Squibb, he's going into shops yeah. where if he came into my shop and says, do you want to be an entrepreneur? I'd tend to fuck off.
Yeah. And he has been getting told to fuck off, though.
And I love him.
I mean, it's amazing content, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is funny.
I like watching.
Is that dangerous, though, in your opinion, that he's, you know, bringing people that maybe aren't cut out for it and suggesting that you should quit your job right now and give it a go?
Yeah, I think it's careless. And like, he doesn't know these people. And he could be trying to pull someone out of the job. Oh, here's 200 quid, start your dream. No, like, he's my friend, all right? And I would say this to his face.
And
his content's really good and he's got a good heart. But if you came into my office and tried to tell all my staff to leave to start their dream, here's 200 quid, you can fuck
off. It's the 200 quid bit that's getting
No, he has given a bit more in some other videos, which I think is nice. And I think that's the direction he's probably
going. Yeah, but the problem is you give the wrong person money. It's not actually what they need. But, you know, of course, he's trying to do the education as well. He's not, you know, and he's good at the social media. So, you know, not everyone's cut out to be an entrepreneur. I will help and talk to anyone who wants to be one. I won't go and I was interviewed today by a headhunter. I was like, if you phone my office trying to headhunt my stuff, I'll tell you to fuck off. I think it's fine. And, you know, if they don't want to talk to me, they don't want to talk to me. And if they're happy in their job, they're happy in their job. No, they might have been happy in their job and you filled their head full of shit. And now they're leaving. Because a lot of people leave my company and they come back.
Really?
Because someone filled their head full of shit.
And you let them come back, though.
Well, it depends. I don't always. But sometimes I do. And I'm talking to two at the moment who want to come back. Because one crypto company filled some guy's head full of shit. And some guy's like, oh, I can work one day a week and go to London one day a week and work from home. So, yeah, no, not everyone can be an entrepreneur. Some people, it's not right for them. But if you're a rebel... A mover, shaker, game shaker, change maker. You want autonomy, freedom, you want big money. Then you can only be an entrepreneur. Just depends what you want. I guess most people listening to you, they want to be an entrepreneur. Start with the side hustle and build it up.
I think that's a brilliant point to end it on. Thank you very much for coming on the show. It's been absolutely fantastic.
All right, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
If you guys enjoyed, make sure to smash that thumbs up button and subscribe to the channel. We'll catch you in the next one.
Also like the video as well.
All right, bye.